Max Kendi is one of the nation's most influential historians of race and public policy, a MacArthur Genius Fellow, and the founding director of the Boston University Center for Anti-Race Research. He is the best-selling author of Stamped from the Beginning, which won the National Book Award, as well as How to Be an Anti-Racist and Stamped: Racism, Anti-Racism, and You. His new work is Chain of Ideas, The Origins of Our Authoritarian Age. Kendi turns his attention to the intellectual roots of authoritarianism, tracing a lineage of ideas from colonial ideologies to present-day political discourse. He argues that systems of power are sustained not only by policies, but by deeply embedded ways of thinking about race, hierarchy, and belonging. Blending historical analysis with contemporary urgency, he examines how these ideas continue to influence democratic institutions and how understanding their origins may be key to confronting them. Again, the name of the book, Chain of Ideas, The Origins of Our Authoritarian Age. It is published by One World. It is a great pleasure to welcome Dr. Ibram X. Kendi back to the roundtable. Thank you so much for being with us. What a delight to have you back on the program.
Of course. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much. Let me ask, we'll begin with sort of the origin story of this book, which is so incredibly researched and goes back so far and takes all of these threads and brings them together and weaves them together. At what point did you start thinking in that way, that this was something that you wanted to that you wanted to connect the dots, for want of a better term?
So I started to investigate why you had so many Americans who were willing to consent to their own domination, or who were willing to empower politicians, finance, economic actors whose policies or whose companies were engaging in hyper-exploitation or essentially harming those very people. Like, how was this happening? Why was this happening? And I think that research question, those research questions led me down a path of research in which I ultimately arrived at great replacement theory. So great replacement theory and its spread and its use by these very politicians were actually causing people to believe that these politicians were there to protect and save them. And great replacement theory, very quickly to level set, is a political theory that suggests there are these powerful, shadowy elites who are enabling peoples of color to displace the livelihoods or jobs or electoral power of white people, who thereby need authoritarian protection.
You say in the prologue that you didn't find the subject of the book, it found you. Talk a little bit about the Great Replacement Theory and how you and your work came on the radar of those theorists and the attacks that you took, that I assume had some bearing on wanting to look at this further.
So I wrote a book entitled How to Be an Anti-Racist in 2019, which was helpful in allowing a lot of people in the United States and in other countries begin to understand what it meant to be anti-racist. What I did not know when I was writing that book, and certainly when I published it, is that a whole host of great replacement theorists had already positioned anti-racism as the major antagonist of what they imagined to be the Great Replacement. So Renaud Camus, who wrote the book The Great Replacement, which was published in 2011, he described anti-racism as bringing on the Great Replacement. When he heard a chant in Charlottesville, Virginia in 2017, like people around the world, in which people chanted, "You will not replace us," he wrote another book entitled You Will Not Replace Us. And in that book, which was published a year before How to Be an Anti-Racist in 2018, he again described anti-racism as bringing on this invasion of people of color who are stealing and taking the lives of white people. And so when I published my book, and particularly after 2020, I noticed this wave of propagandists trying to position, or I should say, misrepresent anti-racism as anti-white. And I didn't fully know where that came from. And I learned that that came from great replacement theory.
I was struck in reading the book. I mean, I was reading this book as the what was happening in Minnesota was going on, and I mean that's just a perfect example of what you're talking about, right? I mean, of what is considered this replacement, this fear that white people are being replaced. Use that a bit of as an example. I know you even started your tour in Minnesota. I mean, it is startling of just that is the perfect example of exactly what you're talking about.
It is, and frankly, that's what I think Minnesotans were among the first group of Americans to collectively realize that great replacement theory was actually a conspiracy theory and certainly wasn't true, because you, of course, had this administration who told Minnesotans that they were being invaded by immigrants, particularly from East Africa, and that those immigrants were harming them. And then the administration then invaded, frankly, as they would call it, or occupied Minnesota with federal troops, with ICE agents, with DSH agents, who ultimately killed two white Minnesotans. Right.
Right.
So and so it really showed that the people who were projecting as seeking to come and protect you were actually coming to take away your civil liberties and freedoms and rights, be facing this occupation, and ultimately were the agents that harmed you.
Do you think that most Americans are even aware of the history? And the playbook that is being used by the Trump administration, that this has been around, it has been refined, it has been tested all over the world.
No, I don't think most Americans are aware, and I can tell you that before researching Chain of Ideas, I wasn't fully aware of the global reach of this playbook, of the way in which this playbook was used by defenders of South African apartheid, the way it was used by Nazi Germans, the way it was used by eugenicists and segregationists. And so some of the most oppressive and vicious and violent people in the last 150 years have been using elements of great replacement theory, which has now resurged in the United States and around the world.
Why does it strike a chord even today?
I think a number of different reasons. I think first that, as I document in Chain of Ideas, there have been a series of historical events that were quite complicated that has happened over the last 2 decades. So going all the way back to the Great Recession, in which that was a period in which you had these politicians say that you're struggling, you can't get a job because of those immigrants, or the limited resources that the government has, they're using it to provide it for Black people or Muslims or immigrants, which of course outraged people to, or even more recently, when people were struggling with inflation rates. That was another time in which you had these politicians argue that instead of the government helping you, or instead of that liberal political party helping you, they're turning around and helping these people who are taking from you. So they've been able to use these historical events to essentially demonize a particular group. When people were struggling, when people were in need, they have said to these people, "You're struggling, you're in need because of those quote unquote replacers."
The book, the way that you tell the story, the way that you unveil this to us is in 10 chapters or so, that each it is describing the where this theory manifested itself in a new country. And I'm curious how you came to those particular places in the globe and those case studies. And because ultimately we're left to really compare them to the United States.
Well, I thought it would be helpful for Americans to ultimately see the global reach of ideas and even policies and even forms of occupation that and even insurrections that we have witnessed over the last 10 years, to see that similar ideas, similar insurrections, similar talking points have actually been used in other countries. And so our politicians are following a playbook that was already refined. The other thing that's also happening is when you go to other countries, when I go to other countries and talk about racism, they typically want to make racism a US problem. And so this book, because it's set in, as you mentioned, it's set in France, in Hungary, in Chile, in the UK, in Germany, in the Netherlands, in Italy, in Canada, in El Salvador, in Russia, it compels other nations to reckon with their own history of racist ideas and great replacement theory, as it does Americans with the American story woven throughout.
And what I find it was so interesting is very different types of politicians
Yes.
who are pushing this theory.
And that's what made that is one of the reasons why I believe, and I try to show that this theory has become the most dominant political theory of our time because it's adaptable to different histories, different demographic settings, different types of politicians. Because there's three elements to great replacement theory that can be altered based on the context. The first is that there are these shadowy elites that are typically presented as liberal or progressive. The second, that there is this group of historically disadvantaged replacers who are coming to destroy and take over. And then finally, the third group is typically a privileged or majority group that apparently is suffering the wrath of the Great Replacement. So those three elements can be mismatched or changed depending on the nation, and they certainly have around the world.
In looking at the idea of, let's just take the shadowy elites, what where does that come from of our belief that there's something in the shadows that is looking to change what is before us?
So that is a renovated element of Nazi theory. So Nazis imagined that there was this quote international Jewish conspiracy, or what they called international Jewry, and that this powerful bloc of Jews were essentially running or seeking to establish a global dictatorship and control the rest of humanity. They positioned pretty much Nazis positioned pretty much all of Europe's ills to this international Jewish conspiracy. They positioned the struggles of everyday Germans to Jews, even as Jews made up about 2% of the German population at the time. And so great replacement theorists typically don't just say an international Jewry. What they say now is globalists. So globalist then becomes the renovated term, so they can try to distance themselves from the anti-Semitic history of that construct. And that's why in Chain of Ideas, I talk a lot about what I call orchestrated distancing, in which these politicians are actively trying to distance themselves from the Nazi or neo-Nazi elements of their theories.
And that orchestrated distancing, I mean, a lot of that, I mean, for want of a, I'm cheapening this, but it's almost a marketing strategy, right?
It is a huge marketing strategy because they're not just trying to distance themselves from, let's say, Nazis, but also even their own father. In the case of Marine Le Pen, the first
Right.
major character in the book, her father was founded her political party in 1972. It was called the National Front. He co-founded that party with people in France who collaborated with the Nazis during the occupation. Another character in the book is Jose Antonio Kast, who was recently became the president of Chile. His father was a Nazi lieutenant. Another character is Giorgio Meloni, who's the current prime minister of Italy. Her political party was founded by Mussolini fascist, and it's changed names over the years, but ultimately the founders of her party are Mussolini fascists, and they have the same address, the same logo, as that party today, even as they have a different name.
We will continue our conversation with Dr. Ibram Kendi about the new book, Chain of Ideas. We'll take a short break and get BBC News, and we'll return right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Our guest this hour, Dr. Ibram Kendi. The new book is Chain of Ideas, The Origins of Our Authoritarian Age. It is published by One World. Before we go much further and talk more, I am interested, you talk about it in the book, but give us an idea of how the title came about.
Sure. So the title Chain of Ideas comes from a French Enlightenment thinker who was speaking to the French monarchy and ultimately stated to the French monarchy that there's a more effective way to dominate and control people than the old way, which was using iron chains. And this French intellectual basically stated that a fool despot will seek to control people with iron chains, but a more effective politician will control people by the chain of their own ideas.
When at what point in the working on this in this book in the writing of this book did that thought, that idea come to you? That connection?
It certainly was not at the beginning. I think it was probably maybe halfway to two-thirds of the way during the research. And once I landed on that as a title, it also gave me the ability to build out the current structure of the book, which, as we mentioned earlier, is 10 links, which are function as 10 different sections, and each of the links are an idea or one of the links in the chain of ideas that formulate great replacement theory.
Talk about how over time the theory expanded to include not just those who are black, but those but Jews and Christians and heterosexuals and men and ethnic minorities and how that came to grow.
Sure. So Renaud Camus, when he wrote The Great Replacement in 2011, he argued that the primary replacers, or the people who were coming to undermine or take over Europe, were African immigrants who were primarily Muslim. And so that was the group that he positioned as the replacers. So at least from his vantage point, this was primarily, at least at that time, a racist idea. But over time, I think the utility of great replacement theory to fearmonger or enrage constituents, and its effectiveness in doing that as it related to race, allowed these politicians to extend it to sexuality, in which you had a Vladimir Putin in Russia positioning queer people as replacing the traditional values of Russian Christians, or even a Viktor Orban who, after he pretty much cut off his nation to immigrants in Hungary, began positioning Christians as under attack by Muslims, or even by queer people, even you had these politicians arguing that even white women who were choosing to not have a large family were contributing to, according to these politicians, the lower birth rates among white people, which they argued was constituting a genocide of white people, which the idea of a white genocide is one of the more extreme versions of great replacement theory.
So you look at just in the past week of the GOP in this country working on the SAVE Act and working to pass that legislation. This is voting legislation, and yet we have anti-trans provisions within that legislation.
Indeed. And so again, even they positioned women as being under attack by trans women.
Right.
There was literally a New York Times column that made that case that I cite in Chain of Ideas. And even in terms of the SAVE Act, I'm happy you mentioned this because the purpose of great replacement theory is not merely to just enrage people who believe that their status or their privileges or their housing or jobs are being lost. It's to get these people to support authoritarian projects that ultimately take away their own rights. And so, in the case of the SAVE Act, this act is being justified on this notion that immigrants are, quote unquote, being imported by the Democratic Party and that they're stealing elections. So, apparently, the electoral process needs to be protected by these immigrants. Now, the actual measure itself ends up disenfranchising the very people who the measure is claiming to protect. And ultimately, the current president states that if the measure is passed, his party won't lose another 50 years. That's not a democracy where an electoral process is rigged so that one party pretty much can't lose. That's what I call in Chain of Ideas an electoral dictatorship that ultimately harms us all.
You talk about this, but and it's fascinating because if a person, if you can get a person, you say this, if you can get a person to believe that their life is under threat, then it's the politician who can say, well, you need a protector, you need a savior, I'm the strong man, I can help you.
Exactly. And we have to understand that, particularly over the last 40 years, if not longer, in the United States, there's been a growing amount of inequality between super wealthy white Americans and even super wealthy white male Americans and low and middle income white Americans. And so, if you're one of those super wealthy white Americans, some of them have decided that they're going to finance these media platforms and political parties and politicians who are saying to everyday white people that you're struggling because of those black people, because of those immigrants, because of those Muslims, which then who is taken off the hook? Who are they
Right.
then not going to blame? And then what are they not going to blame? Because many of those super wealthy people are investing heavily in AI, which is actually stealing the jobs of white people and the rest of us. They're heavily investing in fossil fuels, which are also making this world difficult to live in, as well as powering mass migration. So it's a huge distraction, and it prevents people from seeing who is the true source of their struggles and pain.
Dr. Ibram Kendi is our guest. The name of the new book is Chain of Ideas, the subtitle, The Origins of Our Authoritarian Age. You write that great replacement theory has been used to literally constrain the very people who believe it. That's so striking.
It is, and that's what makes this so incredibly dangerous.
Yes.
And that's what makes it a chain of ideas. Because once you believe it, once you believe great replacement theory, it allows for authoritarians to chain us politically. And they're using this theory to build authoritarian states, as I narrate in the United States and in other countries, you know, around the world. To give one example, you know, you have in Russia, Hungary, and El Salvador, these are nations that have been ruled by the same persons who have more or less established electoral dictatorships. And these people either came to power or maintained power, basically telling majority groups in their country that they're under attack, that they're being replaced. And then a critical mass of those people empowered those elected officials, elected those officials, who then turned around and stripped their own constituents of their rights. And so that's what's happened in other countries. That's what many Americans are seeing as happening right now in the United States.
I know that one of the reasons that you wanted to write this book and for us to have an understanding of what great replacement theory is so that ultimately we can protect ourselves from it, and so that we understand the links in the chain and what is happening. So how do we let this? How do we work on this? That we go about achieving a recognition of, as you say, a shared humanity.
Well, I think first, I think it's important for us to understand the opposite of the chain of ideas. So if the chain of ideas, if great replacement theory causes us to believe that those other groups are fundamentally different than us, and that they're coming, that we're at war, cultural, political wars with those other groups, and that they're literally coming to destroy us, there's an opposite to that line of thinking. And that is what I end with in Chain of Ideas, which is what I call the chain of humanity, in which we recognize that there are different groups. You know, there are different ethnic and cultural and religious groups that we should recognize, but all those groups are linked. Like, we're all still one. We can still see our humanity in other ethnicities, cultures, and religions. And we should recognize that as other groups gain, our group gains. As other groups become more free and more empowered, our group becomes more free and empowered. And the more we recognize those links, the more we can build solidarity that allows us to have the power to take on the oligarchs. And finally, we recognize that the weakest link in the chain of humanity believes that it's not connected to the rest of us. Mm. And so we all have to strengthen our groups, our links, so that we recognize we're all part of this human chain.
Not to be overly cliche, but knowledge is power. If you understand the playbook, you are going to be better at combating it.
Exactly. And that's the primary reason why I wrote this book, so that Americans, so that people around the world can have a very clear understanding of not only the playbook, but its origins, and also its ravages throughout history. Because when we understand the ravages of this playbook, what is likely to happen through what's happened in the past, it also gives us a sense of urgency to ensure that we can build multiracial democracies around the world.
So this gives us so many, this book gives us so many, such insight into the playbook. But otherwise, the playbook is very much concealed, isn't it?
It is, and that is one of the reasons, again, why as a scholar, that's our job. I mean, part of our job, my job as a scholar, is to reveal what is concealed. These politicians and propagandists have gone to great lengths to hide the fact that it was has been great replacement theory animating their politics. And the reason why they've went to great lengths because they know themselves, I suspect, the history of great replacement theory. They know its connections to Nazi Germany, to those who opposed decolonization, to those who enslaved people and colonized people and engaged in apartheid, South Africa. They know that past. There's a very clear and direct link that I chart in Chain of Ideas. And as I mentioned earlier, the people who are espousing this theory are literally the children or grandchildren of many of those Nazis and collaborators.
Have you had conversations with Camus?
I have not.
Have you sought one?
I have not, and it's something I've been thinking about.
And I guess I ask the question because it does. And there's no judgment with this at all. I just it, like it's going to come to that, right? That we're going to have to sort of have these discussions, right? To figure out even more of how we go against these theories, these links, these shocking acts.
Well, what I will say is, I believe that it's looking like Chain of Ideas is going to be published in French, translated into French, and I think that will give me, the potential opportunity to have a discussion. If not with Camus, there's others who, particularly in France, who believe this theory. But part of the challenge of talking to some of these folks is, Camus has made it clear in his work that he is hostile to science
Yes.
and he is hostile to data. And so as a scholar who uses data and science, at the sort of foundation of my work, it becomes difficult to engage, with someone who says, as Camus has said, that if the data does not reveal that the great replacement is happening, it is not the great replacement that's the problem. It's data and science that's the problem.
So you go after science, you go after scientific data, you challenge higher education for the masses, and that is part of book banning, which is to keep people from learning and understanding.
Yeah, I mean, propagandists for centuries have known that the way in which it is easier to manipulate people is when you engage in the systematic undereducation or miseducation of people. There was an abolitionist who wrote about how poor non-enslaving whites were, to use his term, legislated for ignorance. And he wrote about how enslavers actively sought to maintain the lack of knowledge about how slavery was harming white, non-enslaving whites in the South so that they could continue to support a system that was actually oppressing them too, as it was obviously enslaved Black people.
Just of how you have been brought into all of this, the White House has labeled you a hardcore woke activist. What impact does that have on you? I don't know how personally you take that, or how you come to terms with that, especially with all of the other crazy stuff that is being that is being said at the same time.
Well, I try to stand on principle as an historian, in which I try to think about my job. And we all have our jobs, right? And And sometimes when we do our job in an effective way, in my case, when I'm able to collect data and facts from the past to give us a better understanding of what we're facing, in our time, some people are not going to like that, right? And powerful forces are not going to like that. When they're not able to challenge the facts, they're going to, and they don't like the message, what are they going to do? They're going to go after the messenger. We all know that. And so I understand that. Obviously, it doesn't stop me or silence me in any way. If anything, it encourages me to ensure that I'm continuing to stand on my facts, on facts and on research.
Do you see inklings that the tide is turning, that there is a growing concern to the authoritarianism that has even come since Election Day 2024?
Oh, I do. I do think that there is a growing number of people in this country and other countries who are realizing that these authoritarians who've presented themselves as their saviors are actually only trying to save their own power. And I don't know, though, how much of an awareness of great replacement theory is, and I think that's where I'm hoping Chain of Ideas makes an intervention.
Dr. Ibram Kendi is the author of the new book, Chain of Ideas: The Origins of Our Authoritarian Age. The book is now out this week from One World. Dr. Kendi, it's always a great honor and such a treat to speak to you and listen to your ideas and learn from you. I so appreciate you being with us this morning, and I thank you for this incredible work.
Of course. Thank you as always.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, Chain of Ideas: The Origins of Our Authoritarian Age, published by One World. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.